Musing, your one-stop shop for the stories, secrets, and shenanigans of a popcorn-fueled theme park journalist. I'm Carly Wiesel, and it is going to be a big week over here at Very Amusing HQ. But before we get into that, I just want to give a little tip of the cap to Halloween time. Halloween has officially arrived at Universal Orlando, where they kicked off Halloween Horror Nights this past week, and also at Disneyland Resort, where we got to see some unbelievable costumes for the Fab Five. I mean, Mickey Mouse and his little pumpkin, Goofy in his new outfit as a tree. Oh my goodness. They are adorable, and I cannot get enough of it. I do need to make a public acknowledgement up top, though, that I am not at either resort. I'm not in Orlando or at Disneyland because I am currently on family vacation. On Labor Day weekend, we always try to all get together. And I still have this, like, sneaking suspicion, like, oh, man, I should have been there. If I was able to, I would have. But then again, I just keep telling myself that it's literally still our summer vacation. Like, it's a weird thing in theme park dumb that you cannot go cover Halloween because it is summer vacation. I mean, the reason my family is all together is because the kids are not even yet back in school. So I guess I can't feel that bad that I'm not celebrating a holiday that falls on the very last day of October when I'm currently still cramming in all the summertime activities I have not yet done. Because August literally ended a few days ago. Again, I'm not here to rag on anyone's fun. I just wanted to let you know the reason we don't have a standalone episode dedicated to either is because it's summertime in my brain, summertime in my body, and we have not gotten there yet. And that applies to those resorts, but of course, Walt Disney World has been celebrating Halloween for the past 14 weeks. So I guess we're just slightly bypassing it this year because we have bigger things to talk about, especially with what is going down this weekend. I will be attending a little known thing called D23 Expo in Anaheim, California. And for anyone who is unfamiliar or has just heard the term but doesn't really know what's going on, D23 Expo is basically Disney's own standalone version of Comic-Con. They're honoring every facet of the company at this with fan-focused activations and pavilions and activities and zillions of announcements. Truly, you're going to be bombarded with news in the next few days. There's going to be celebrity appearances there. There are costume contests. There is so much happening. And it is all powered by Disney's official fan club, D23. Now, the reason I'm giving you this whole breakdown is because I will be on the ground for all of it. But even better, I'm taking you along with me. Yes, we are doing a full week of Very Amusing podcast coverage from D23 Expo 2022, complete with daily episodes. Daily podcast episodes. So whether you are watching the live streams from afar, of which there are plenty, check out the full schedule on d23.com, or attending yourself, our daily drops will fill you in on everything you may have missed, from new announcements coming out of Marvel, Pixar, and Lucasfilm, to breaking down and analyzing major Disney Parks news, to even the very, very special Archives exhibits, which we are previewing here today on this episode. You've probably seen the D23 Expo schedule, but this is what you can look forward to here on Very Amusing going forward. We have today, Wednesday's episode, giving you a sneak peek rundown of the very exciting Walt Disney Archives exhibits that will be featured at D23 Expo before anyone even gets to lay their eyes on them. Before I've even been able to see them, we're all going to hear about it, which is very exciting. And then starting Friday morning, we will have a recap of the D23 Expo media preview event from the night prior. I'm going to give you the lay of the land, what actually happens inside Anaheim Convention Center, and what I am personally most excited about after my first glimpse inside those walls. Saturday morning, we'll have a day one recap. Sunday morning, we'll have a day two recap. And Monday morning, I'm bringing you a day three recap of my absolutely bonkers final day of D23 Expo, which starts with a very special panel about everything new coming to Disney's theme parks worldwide and ends with my very own self-hosted Duffy and Friends panel, aka the highlight of my life. It does not get better than that. I cannot wait, and I cannot wait to tell you all about it. Now, I will be attending oodles of panels on everything from a 30-year celebration of Muppet's Christmas Carol, I'm going to see Disney legends crowned in real life, and I'm going to get a full rundown of every announcement from the super secret Marvel, Star Wars, and 20th Century Fox panel. And then next week, On Wednesday, we will be recapping the major news, diving deeper into analyzing those theme park announcements, and maybe, just maybe, just maybe, just maybe, you might be getting a major dose of Duffy and Friends directly to your ears. It's going to be a huge week, as you can tell from this intro to this podcast. This is just me outlining our schedule. And I encourage all of you to follow along on social media. As you know, I am at Carly Wiesel on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and I will be churning out updates non-stop, which is especially noteworthy for those major studio panels. Lucasfilm, Disney, Pixar, 20th Century Fox, Marvel, and Disney Animation will be releasing loads of news, and I will be allowed to post about them in real time as a member of the media. So please, please, please follow me there to keep up with up-to-the-minute updates. Check back here each and every day to the feed so you can hear what was going on, and I just cannot wait to bring you so much news and so many things. I have never been to D23 Expo while I had a podcast. I've been to D23 Expo many times, but I have not been while this podcast has existed. So usually I was there for other magazines, other websites, or even tweeting on behalf of other companies, posting on Instagram on behalf of different magazines. And now I'm here in the very amusing bubble with all of you in this little community, and I cannot wait to bring you everything. And I shouldn't call us a little community. We're a big community, but it feels little because we all get along. Okay. I won't get too folksy about it. So with that, let's get into our D23 Expo podcast bonanza. Stick with me now, today, and all of next week, and I promise you're gonna have the time of your Disney love and life. Stick around, it's gonna be good. Okay, you know that feeling that everyone knows something that you don't? For me, that used to be Quince. But no more. Quince is a truly astounding retailer, essentially carrying everything a person on your mood board would wear. We're talking washable silk blouses, chic leather bags, 14-karat gold jewelry, European linen dresses, and the best part of all is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They're up here with $50 Mongolian cashmere sweaters. $50! Beautiful, timeless items you can wear and actually live in. Meaning, you don't have to be scared to bring them on your theme park travels. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And if you're sensitive to retailers like I am, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. But it's not just your everyday work-life clothes. They have everything. I recently joined a new gym, big deal for me, and desperately needed new workout clothes to wear there. It's kind of like an LA gym. Like, it kind of got to look cute. So I ordered a pair of their Ultraform bike shorts and high-rise pocket leggings. And when I tell you, the quality of these leggings is truly on par with brands I paid three times as much for, which really kind of makes me love these three times more. I'm not only going to buy them again, but actually buy the other travel stuff in my cart because they have things like beautiful pastel suitcases for $129 and these wildly affordable compression packing cubes that I have been waiting forever to buy compression packing cubes, and they're always so pricey. And here, the price fits. So if you want to get ready for work, your new gym, travel, anything in your life, go to Quince. Quince.com/amusing will get you free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Ooh, that's nice for someone who puts stuff off like I do. That's Quince.com/amusing to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/amusing.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back. This week for our kickoff D23 Expo episode, we have the one and only Becky Klein, the director of the Walt Disney Archives. If you're a theme park fan, you're likely already familiar with Becky and her team's incredible work. And she is here to discuss Not only the incredible displays, exhibits, and panels the Walt Disney Archives have lined up for D23 Expo this year, but also what's next when the archives come to you as part of an exhibit touring nationwide in honor of the Walt Disney Company's 100th anniversary. We will get into Disney 100, the exhibition, and so much more within this episode. Becky is also sharing details about Walt's plane, which spent 23 years on display at Disney Hollywood Studios' backlots, and will reappear at D23 Expo with a fully restored exterior and an exhibit of its own. But we're also going to talk about this year's main exhibit. Walt Disney Archives presents Step in Time and how it came together, as well as the very special reason it can't be missed. There is a real nugget of a story in this episode, and you gotta listen for it because it will blow your mind the way it blew mine. Anyway, in this exhibit, Walt Disney Archives presents Step in Time at D23 Expo 2022. Guests will be able to step into scenes from different decades throughout the history of the Walt Disney Company, but also do so while seeing archival items. It's going to be very special. I personally cannot wait to see it very, very soon. And I'm just going to turn it over to Becky, who has so much more to say. Hope you enjoy. Becky Klein, welcome to Very Amusing.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
I am so excited to talk to you. We are going to get into all of it. Walt's plane, Disney 100, the exhibition. But I would love to start by discussing the Walt Disney Archives Presents Step in Time, which people are going to be able to see starting Friday at D23 Expo.
Well, this is a very special year for us. Next year, of course, is our 100th anniversary. So we're theming a lot of things. This is kind of the kickoff for the whole celebration, the D23 Expo. So this particular exhibition has been created by the Walt Disney Archives to celebrate a look back. And so we decided to do a step in time. So what it is we have our 12,000 square foot exhibit that we do on the show floor regularly. We usually have an exhibit that's our kind of pavilion, as it were. But it's a large exhibition. And for just 3 days, it's kind of mind boggling that we do this big an exhibit. But it is really fun. And it'll be themed around the 100th anniversary of the company and taking a step through a kind of a timeline that you can walk through in person. So it'll be really fun. We've focused on vignettes in this one. So there's a vignette that's dedicated to each relative decade throughout the company's history, and there'll be assets and photo opportunities, and it'll be really fun. And so it's kind of a hybrid of a traditional exhibit with actual artifacts from our collection, but it'll also be very engaging and open for people to take photos and enjoy themselves, a little bit interactive in some places too. So it's going to be really fun.
Since so many of our listeners are Disney Parks fans, and I know that in the release, it was mentioned that there's going to be Haunted Mansion stuff in this exhibit. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, one of the decades that we were trying to celebrate was the 70s. And we figured, well, we've already celebrated Disneyland earlier in the 50s in the exhibit. So we looked at our collections and decided that what we would do is one of the iconic attractions from Walt Disney World in the 70s that opened with the park was Haunted Mansion. And it just so happens that we have a lot of really great assets from that attraction. We were part of a reimagining of parts of the attraction and got some really great iconic pieces. So what we are showing is a sequence from the Haunted Mansion at Walt Disney World at Magic Kingdom, and it is the attic sequence with the bride. We had an Imagineering reimagination of that area back in the late 2000s. They went in and they changed a lot of things in that attic sequence. And so we were told that it was happening, and we happened to be there, myself and a couple other partners. We were there for meetings that week, and they said, if you want to go in and take some of those things for the archives, you can. So we frantically ran around everybody we knew, and we borrowed power tools and things and got a truck, and we didn't even have proper clothes to wear. But we managed, and we got into the attic while they were working, and we were able to take all of the set dressings, the set deck, and the bride itself. They removed the bride for us, so we have that. And they took all the things that surrounded her furnishings from the attic, and they gave them to the archives. And so for the first time, we're going to show the bride with the furnishings around her and recreate the look of the attic sequence from Haunted Mansion at Walt Disney World.
Oh my gosh.
And it was an amazing time, because literally when they talk about blood, sweat, and tears, we didn't bleed, none of us. But I tell you, it was kind of crazy, because as any of you might know, you know, they didn't run the air conditioning while this construction was going on. And so it was June in Florida, and I'm up in this attic with no air conditioning on, and it's dusty and things like that. So, but literally we had to lay on the floor to disassemble some things and pull things out. And so we call ourselves the Raiders of the Lost Archives for a reason. We go in and find things, and it's not quite as glamorous as you might think, you know.
Oh, I fully thought things are just FedExed to you.
No.
So if you didn't happen to be in Florida for a meeting, does that mean we would never be able to see this at D23 Expo?
Probably not. Yeah. And we just had business clothes. So I had taken one pair of jeans along with me just in case we had some time off. And we had to borrow shirts from, we got our clothes were so filthy by the time we got done, because they purposely keep that attic dusty, you know. And by the time we got finished, we were hot and sweaty and filthy. And we had to actually go over to the monorail roundhouse and clean up in this tiny little bathroom, and then go to a business lunch afterwards at France Pavilion. So we had to borrow clean t-shirts from the monorail crew.
So, like, when you go to this event, you're like, people are like, oh, how's your day? And you're like, no big, just had to like carve a scene out of an attraction. Now I'm here at lunch.
Yeah, sorry, my jeans are dusty. You know,
is this normal? Does this happen from time to time?
It happens far more often than you might think. There are times when we started bringing in our collections. We spent some time at Disney's Hollywood Studios, and some of the things were still on the back lot there, and they had to be removed. And so we physically went over there and worked with a crew to bring the things out. Most of the time, it's a crew that we hire that actually does the physical labor. But in that instance, it was like, take it or you won't get it, you know.
But in a pinch, just call Becky. She'll find some power tools.
My VP and I got in there with power tools, and we took the things, you know, we took the things out. And then we had to get a truck. I don't even remember how we got that truck, but we got a truck to bring it out for us. And then one of our pals at WDI, who ships things back and forth, was kind enough to arrange to ship the pieces back to us to California.
Oh, so people are going to freak out.
I hope so.
It's so interesting because so many of us would get so excited at even at some of the special events we go to, just being in a backdrop that honors something that used to happen. But now you're really kind of in it.
Yeah, having the actual assets as part of this exhibit makes it something pretty special. I mean, people love to pose with Disney exhibit pieces, or you get photo ops sometimes at events and things. I know D23 has done some things where you can pose with an object from the archives. But this is kind of fun because we're bringing out a lot of really interesting things that you will be amidst. And it'll be kind of fun.
I like that in a way. It's kind of like, listen, we can't let you time travel, but this is the next best thing we have for you.
Exactly.
It's so kind of the archives to do it that way.
Oh, that's what we're here for. That. That's part of our goal and our mission is to share these cool things with the people who love them the most. And so anytime we can bring out the artifacts and show them in person, people get very excited and we just love doing it.
Well, I'd love to talk about your process. With this year's exhibit tied to celebrating Disney's 100-year anniversary, where does your team even begin to decide what to include when the options include everything?
You know, it's really kind of interesting. We had a dilemma this year because we also have a major traveling exhibition launching in February, which is going to be Disney 100, the exhibition. And so we had to take a look at what assets were going to be in that exhibit. And we tried to show something different at the expo. So first we looked at what things were off limits because they're going to be in the big traveling exhibit. And then looked at what else told the stories the best. And so we split it up by decades so that you can walk into, you know, the 1950s or the 1960s, 1970s, something representative of that era, and see some fun assets. And so we just looked at our collections then and said, which pieces, you know, would fans be the most excited about seeing and what's relevant to their experience during that decade?
Oh my gosh. When you're selecting items and I'm sure eliminating them, does it ever feel like, you know, you have to like pick your favorite children? Like, do you feel a little guilty when some stuff is cut? Because not everything can fit.
I do. I always feel guilty about it. And every time we create an exhibit, in the back of my mind, I've got, Oh, well, I think I'll hold those things aside, and I have an idea for an exhibit about that topic. And, oh, well, we have, you know, we couldn't do it in this one, but hey, down the road, I've got some ideas for an exhibit on that. So we try to change things up so that you're not seeing the same assets all the time, because our collection is pretty varied and pretty vast. And so we like to show things that we haven't displayed before. But then, of course, there's some iconic pieces that people just don't mind how many times they see, and we include those as well.
And because we're discussing this and this episode will go out right before D23 Expo starts, are there any items within the exhibit that you can call out that are your personal favorites or that you think fans are going to freak out over?
Well, I think in one segment of it, people always ask me what my favorite Disney film is, and I always give the same answer, that it was Mary Poppins, because I was a young child when that came out, and it was the very first movie I ever saw. So it's very near and dear to my heart. But I'm really excited because we're not, you know, recreating it in depth, but we're actually giving you the opportunity to go on a jolly holiday. Let's just put it that way. So there'll be some things there that are really fun to see, and pieces that I particularly love.
And if you're excited about it, we should probably be excited about it.
Absolutely.
And if that wasn't enough, you've also got Walt Disney's plane coming to D23 Expo.
Yes, it's now the largest Walt Disney Archives artifact. Everybody asks me, what's the biggest thing you have? And I used to say it was the Black Pearl, because we have that. But now I've got Walt Disney's plane as part of the archives assets. And we're pretty excited about being able to bring it out here. Our partners at Amazon sponsored this, and everybody at D23 and WDI has been working together with us to bring the plane out from Florida. And this beautifully restored piece that WDI did an amazing job restoring it back to the original look that it had when Walt Disney used to fly in it. And it's going to be coming to the arena of the expo, and you'll be able to see it in person, all spruced up. But we're also doing a really fun special exhibit showing things that we've never seen before alongside of it, that you'll be able to see photography of the exhibit and also flight logs and assets and things from inside the plane. And it's really great. The plane itself, of course, you can't go inside. So some of these things that originally flew with Walt in the plane will be on display in our archives exhibit. So I think the two together are going to be pretty exciting, especially for aircraft fans, as well as all Disney fans and, of course, Walt fans.
In reading about the plane, I read that, you have to correct me if this is wrong, because it still makes no sense to me, that Walt's favorite onboard seat enabled him to monitor flight conditions. Like he had...
Sure.
What was it? His seat? What is that?
Well, you know, when you buy a jet, they get delivered with like nothing special. You get to pick. It's almost like buying a car without the inside in it. You get to pick what color seats you want and what kind.
I'm nodding like, oh, when I bought my jets, I've gone through this process. Yes.
But it's very true. They get to customize the interior of the plane. And so Walt customized the interior of that jet when it was purchased. And so what he had done is he had his own favorite seat on the plane. And he had put in next to the seat, he had put in a telephone so that he could call the cockpit anytime he wanted to talk to the flight crew. And then he also had a little altimeter put in, which showed airspeed and things on it. It's got three little dials, and then one of them has Mickey Mouse on it. And that's set right next to his seat so that he could always see what was going on with the plane, how high it was and the airspeed and everything. And we have that. It was removed from the plane and given to the archives back in the 70s. And so it'll be on display at the expo. So you'll be able to see those pieces. So there's a whole vignette that describes and it'll be really fun. You'll get to see Walt's seat. You'll get to see the altimeter and the telephone and his seat belts and all those kind of things.
Oh my God. You get to see the seat belts? Oh
yeah. He actually had monogrammed seat belts.
Oh, things were so cool back then.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know, was he just curious or scared of flying?
Oh, he loved to fly. Walt was very interested in all forms of transportation. You know, in the earliest days, of course, it was trains, because that's how you got across the country. And once you could fly across the country and then eventually around the world, he loved to fly because, A, it got him there faster, but he was always fascinated by planes. But he also loved ships and ocean liners and things. And he traveled by every manner of transportation that you can think of. But he loved to fly by plane, and he did it quite a lot. And, of course, it was really great to have the jet when they were, you know, going around and looking at land for Walt Disney World and taking the folks from the studio and WDI back and forth to New York for the 1964-65 New York World's Fair. They flew a lot of people. And then the plane was continued to be used by the company for various things after Walt's passing. And, you know, groups that would go around and groups of animators would fly to do presentations at universities and art schools and colleges and recruiting things. And so the plane has been used, you know, for many, many years until it was finally retired at Walt Disney World in the early 90s.
Wow. How special is it for you to be able to bring this plane across the country to a centralized location packed with Disney fans? Like, this is the core audience for this.
Yes, this is so exciting for me because it's something that, you know, people have asked me about over the years many, many times. You know, they knew that Walt's plane was on display in the back lot at the Disney backlot studio tour and at Hollywood Studios. And then when it was pulled out of there, when they had to reimagine that area, people, what's going to happen to it? What's going to happen to it? And so I've been working for years with WDI to find something to do with that plane. And when the opportunity came up to bring it out and show it at the D23 Expo, I got very excited. And so I'm just thrilled that it's getting honored in this way. And I think Walt would be very happy about that too.
Oh, I can't wait to see it all spruced up.
I know. It's great. And it's going to look huge in that arena. It's so exciting to have a full-on plane inside a building.
Oh my gosh.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And if you weren't busy enough, like restoring planes and setting up interactive exhibits, you also have, as you mentioned, Disney 100, the exhibition. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, we're really excited because the exhibit's going to open at the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia in February. And we're actually going to have a presentation all about the making of that exhibition at the D23 Expo. So that presentation will be on Saturday, September 10th. And then we're going to live stream the presentation about the exhibition with all of our announcements about further venues and dates and scheduling and all that. So that's going to be a really fun big exhibit that we're doing on the backlot stage on Saturday.
Cool. And because it, you know, it revolves around the entire history of the company, like this is not a, you know, this is a lot of stuff that's going into this. What can fans expect from this, just running the gamut of the whole company? What type of things are special enough to be in this exhibit?
Oh, my goodness. That was the hardest part about this exhibit is to figure out, you know, because you can't just tell 100 years in one 15,000 square feet, even that's a big exhibit. It's not huge, not big enough to show everything. So what we tried to do, and we went back to theming on this, and the basic theme of it is that we went back to the very beginning to Walt Disney himself and looked at what philosophies Walt created during his own time, during his own creative output, and how we still carry on those philosophies today. So the importance of storytelling and global outreach and things like personality animation and characters having their own distinct personalities. That was an innovation of his. Innoventions, things like that, different things that we invented and that Disney created. And how today we still follow all those philosophies that Walt Disney himself developed in his own work. And we still do it all today the same way. And so that told us how we could tell a story that wasn't particularly linear, because we wanted to make sure that we focused on the importance of music or a day in the parks or the wonder of Disney, how it makes you feel today, and your the experience of the guest. So there's 9 different galleries and some very special surprises and a lot of interactive elements, which I think you'll really get excited. And we tried to put at least touches or glimpses of as many different properties and films and attractions and characters and events that we could into the exhibit to just, you won't be able to see everything, of course, but we're trying our very best to have everybody and see something that means something special to them.
What is it like for you to send items from the archives out on the road? Like, does it feel like sending a kid to summer camp?
We're very careful about that. We are very, whenever we send exhibits out, we always send people with the items, you know, so there's always what we call a courier. It's one of the staff members who goes and handles it and makes sure that it's carefully handled and put into the exhibition or on loan for the event. And so we're very, very careful about those things, and we take really good care of them because we want to make sure that they last forever, as long as possible, if not forever. So we're very, very cautious about that, which is why we don't loan it all the time. We only send things out, and we only send them out for a particular length of time. We're very careful about the environmental controls around them, what kind of lighting levels they have, and what humidity and temperature they're displayed in. So we're very careful and cautious about that.
Why do you personally think it's so important that these items continue to see the light of day and aren't just tucked away for safekeeping forever?
Well, you know, there's two schools of thought on that. There's the idea that things need to be preserved forever. But my thought is, it's like, what's the point of having these things locked away in a cold, dark storeroom if they're not going to be shared and enjoyed and used and presented to the public? So one of the reasons that we started D23 so many years back now is that we wanted to go into the archives and find the things that people really loved and wanted to see and bring them out and share them. And so that's why we started doing D23, doing events and presentations and expos and exhibits and things, is a way for us to take all these great treasures and share them with the people who love them the most. And although we still do traditional archival work where we have documents and things that are very sensitive to light and need to be specially preserved. And in those cases, we do a lot of digitization and conservation so that we have the materials that we can share and we can share the information, but we can also preserve the artifacts to keep them safe from time.
And I'm sure in this line of work, you are inundated with just endless doses of fun nostalgia, but personally, what is the last Walt Disney Archives item that you saw face to face that you were just delighted by?
Oh my goodness! Every time a movie wraps, we get new things in. We are constantly being approached by the parks, for example. Whenever an attraction is reimagined or updated, you know, something needs to come out, and it's something that everybody loves. You know, they make sure that it comes to the archives. I'm trying to think what was the most recent acquisition that really meant something to me. There's so many different things. It's hard to think about it, but just going through the exhibition and seeing, we pulled all the exhibit pieces together because we have to condition check them in our facility, where we brought out everything and put it on tables, and just walking around that room and looking at these treasures all in one place got me very excited. And I thought being able to see this inside the exhibit is going to be so fabulous. So just seeing all these things in one place together just gives me a charge every time.
Oh my gosh. It makes me just dream of what mail day at the archives is like.
It's crazy. It's multiple deliveries every day. And we have a whole team who their sole job is just to, you know, arrange getting things into the archives and getting them processed. And so every time a film gets wrapped, they contact us and say, what do you want from the film? And we have to get it and then check it in and take good care of it, and then let everybody know that we have it so that we can use it going forward and showcase it.
So cool. Mm-hmm. Now, I asked our friend Jeffrey Epstein this question when he was on my podcast, and he, like the communications whiz he is, very carefully dodged it. So I'll rephrase it for you in a way that won't get either of us in trouble. Okay. If you can take home one item from the archives, any item of your choosing, it is a gift from Mickey Mouse himself, you're allowed to take it home, what would you choose?
Oh, it would be so hard for me to pick something that I would deprive other people from seeing. So it's hard to say that I would take that home. But my one piece in the archives. Like I mentioned that Mary Poppins is my favorite because of its history with me and my family. I would say the Feed the Birds Snow Globe from Mary Poppins is probably a piece that I would miss once I retired from the archives. Let's put it that way.
It's a great way to put it. And I'm sure there are plenty, but since Disney's 100th anniversary is right around the corner and your work deals so much with the company's retrospectives, throughout your own career at the Walt Disney Archives, what comes to mind as one of the top highlights?
Oh, my goodness. You know, being on the group of people who took that giant step and created D23 is one of them. That was a huge thing. And it was a very small group of us who did that. I'm really proud of that we were able to accomplish that, because I think it's meant a lot and has done so many great things for people. Also, I was given the honor of being able to restore Walt Disney's office. And so that is something that I've done in my career that I'm very proud of. And I still get the chills myself every time I go up in that office. I think a new one is bringing the plane out and taking care of its history as well as its future.
Oh, as well as its future. I love that. So once you are done with all of the many, many, many things that you are currently working on, what is the next thing you have to look forward to?
Our work with D23 is always challenging and exciting. And then we'd work with other divisions around the company, like Disney Plus. They always have great new series coming out. One that we worked with recently, they have a new season coming out, is Behind the Attraction, which I personally was able to do a lot of work on that as one of the presenters. And of course, there's a great new standalone, a single piece called Mickey, The Story of a Mouse, which is really fun. And I got to work on that one. And we did a lot of work helping the producers of that film to get all their historical material together. And so that's coming out soon. Of course, I worked on shows like Prop Culture and A Dog's Life. And of course, we did our own a little documentary called An Adventure Through the Walt Disney Archives. Adventures Through the Walt Disney Archives. And if you haven't seen that one, that'll give you a really good grounding in what we do at the archives.
Oh, we'll give people the best type of homework right before D23 Expo.
Exactly. And I have to give a shout out too, because not only are we doing the exhibits and the things that I mentioned, but we also oversee the Disney Legends program from the archives. So that's a huge thing for us. And we have some really great legends this year that people now have been told who the honorees are going to be. And they'll come to see that. That's a big moment for us. And also we have the Walt Disney Archives stage, which is 3 days of programming all day long on that stage with all kinds of great productions and partners around the company bringing in historically, you know, themed presentations. And so if you're a Disney history fan, that's the place to go. So please check your D23 Expo app and see what the scheduling is on the Walt Disney Archive stage, because there's all kinds of really fun things, including a presentation about the history of the plane.
Incredible. I feel like on one hand, you have the best job in the world. And on the other hand, I'm like, someone let Becky take a nap.
I do have the best job in the world. And it is exhausting sometimes, but it's a good kind of tired.
You just listed like every space at D23 Expo.
Just about.
Oh, my God. Well, I have one last question. I'm not sure if you're allowed to discuss this, but when laymen like me picture the archives, I think of kind of like that Disneyland commercial, like a magical warehouse filled with ride vehicles and costumes and like a secret museum. And I know the actual archives are shrouded in secrecy and I don't want to cross any lines, but are you able to divulge at all about if things are presented nicely, what it's like to be in there, what it feels like to be around these objects? I am imagining everything from like a space museum to like a 70s warehouse locked in time. And I just don't know what to picture in my brain.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. The Walt Disney Archives is, it's a little bit museum. Our main offices where where people can come in through D23, you can do tours of the studio and they bring you into the offices and you get to see where we work. There's exhibits in there that we put out specifically for visitors. But for the most part, I mentioned that we carefully tuck away things in the dark. And that's very true. I mean, the warehouses of the Walt Disney Archives, I have to admit, look less like, you know, a fantastical museum and more like the final scene from the Raiders of the Lost Ark. So it's It's big warehouses with lots of shelving and lots of big wooden crates stenciled with mysterious things and barcodes. But no, all those pieces do have to be carefully protected. So most of the time they're hidden away from the light. And in that case, you know, it's not quite as fantastical as you might imagine. But once you get those cases open, it's pretty cool.
It's like the world's best game of hide and seek. Just
exactly.
See what you can find. Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for coming on and telling everyone about every incredible thing the Walt Disney Archives has at D23 Expo. It sounds amazing. I can't wait to see everything in just a few hours, basically.
I'm pretty excited that you're all coming out to visit us. And I can't wait. And, you know, all I can say is go into your D23 Expo application, your app, and check out all of the great things to do. There's so much to see and do that you won't be bored at all, and you'll find plenty of things to take up your time.
Oh, I can't wait. Thank you so much.
Hi, Carly. This is Meg from Florida. Love your podcast. Love your episode about the Disneyland guide. And I have a question about the Matterhorn ride. I was kind of surprised that you didn't include or mention Matterhorn as a must ride. No judgment, just genuinely curious your thoughts on the ride. I kind of expected you to mention it just because it is, you know, iconic, original to just Disneyland and all of that. So just curious your thoughts on the ride. Seriously, just love the show. Love the happiness and joy that you bring to social media and the podcast world. And yeah, thanks so much. Bye.
Oh, Meg, you caught me. First of all, thank you so much for listening to the Disneyland episode. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. But yeah, you might be the only person who caught and then called me out on the fact that I did not explicitly recommend the Matterhorn bobsleds, as its full title is, at Disneyland Park. So here's the deal. Matterhorn, I love it. I respect it. I love walking past it. It brings me so much joy. It is beautiful. It adds something really special to the park, especially when you're in the hub. And as you know, I love a Matterhorn macaroon. Love holding it up to the mountain, being like, I'm eating a cookie shaped like that thing. How cool. It's wonderful. But once I step on board that vehicle, my love for Matterhorn bobsleds straight up plummets. It plummets. I have gone on it a handful of times in the past year. And every time I go on it, I'm like, I don't think I can do this anymore. And I'm not elderly. So I feel like that really says something about the ride system. That ride does something to my body that makes me feel terrible. And then on top of like the jerkiness and kind of like the rough ride, it is a rough ride. It is old. It should maybe be out of commission. That's all I'm going to say. On top of the rough ride, sometimes you just go through water and you get completely splashed from like still murky water. It's not my favorite ride experience, but I love seeing people on it and I love that it's there and it's great, but I'm not dying to go on it ever. So I hope that clears up why I didn't explicitly recommend it. Again, I love Matterhorn. I respect Matterhorn. I think it is a wonderful, historic, incredible ride. I'm so glad it's there, but I don't always physically want to put my body through the torture that is Matterhorn bobsleds. I'm sorry. It hurts me. If it doesn't hurt you, go have a good time. Have so much fun. But for me, physically, I don't think I can do it anymore. And I really don't feel that way on much else. Maybe a little Indiana Jones. I feel like, oh God, like I gotta like strap my body down. But for Matterhorn, it just hurts so bad. It hurts so bad. And these places are fun. And I like to enjoy them and not worry about how much calcium is in my bones. So I hope that helps clarify it. Thank you so much for listening. Matterhorn macaroons forever. Love Matterhorn bobsleds. Just love them from afar. Okay. Please don't cancel me for this. Okay, bye.
Hi, Carly. This is Emma from Ohio. I'm a longtime listener. However, I just got out of grad school. I'm a recent grad, so I am having to catch up on some. I just listened to the Andrew Barth Feldman show, and I was so delighted to hear about you two talk about your mutual love of Muppets. I also love the Muppets. It's hard to sometimes find people who like it as much as me. I actually just wrote my master's thesis on the Muppets. So I was wondering if you could spend a day at a Disney park with a Muppet, who would it be and why? I think I would go with Gonzo because he would get into all kinds of crazy shenanigans. Thanks. Love the podcast.
Oh my goodness, Emma. This is such a good question. So much so that I can't believe we've never gotten it before, but here we are. But even before we get into that, I'm sorry. You did your master's thesis on the Muppets? What? Please, please, I'm begging you, please text me or call me back at 747 Churros so I can know more about this, because I think I speak on behalf of all Very Amusing listeners when I say we desperately need more information about this. Desperately. Now, to get to the question at hand, while I fully respect you choosing Gonzo, because you're right, he would get into so many fun shenanigans, I feel like practically the Muppet I would most want to go to a Disney theme park with is going to be Miss Piggy. And I don't want to seem like a social climber, and I don't want to seem selfish, but the thing is, Miss Piggy is like a bona fide diva. She is a celebrity in her own right, which means that you are going to get red carpet treatment. And I know that I'm basically using Miss Piggy and like being one of her closest friends so that I myself can get a full week of VIP tours alongside her, but it's fine because I think that going to Disney World with Miss Piggy and getting all those extra perks would be incredible. Just to see Miss Piggy in her element, like wearing sunglasses, like gliding through the parks, like, hi, with like plaid tour guides flanking her on either side. Like, that's what I want to see of Miss Piggy out in the world. And to get an up-close view of that, I could never say no. You know that we'd go to like Victoria and Albert's also, which would be like such a nice night out with Miss Piggy. Like they gave us all a pork dish. Like, oh no, it would be very awkward. So I think I gotta choose Miss Piggy, even though I probably would get along the best with Fozzie Bear. I just think there'd be a lot of funny jokes made throughout the day. But Fozzie can come too. VIP tours, they can be 9 extra people besides Miss Piggy. So yeah, I'm taking Miss Piggy for the perks. I'm sorry. That's what I'm going for. It would be so much fun, though. Like, can you imagine her, her just throwing a fit that she can't spend the night in Cinderella Castle? Oh, it would be pure Miss Piggy. Prime Miss Piggy. Oh my gosh, I love this question. Now I want to go to the parks with Miss Piggy. Oh, thank you so much for asking this. Congratulations on grad school. What an accomplishment. And I'm not kidding. Please let us know what this thesis was about. I gotta know.
Hi, Carly. This is Brittany from Orlando. So you mentioned Halloween Horror Nights. I wasn't sure if you are an HHN person, if that's something you're into, or if you had seen the menu for any of the booths this year at HHN. I love that it's kind of becoming a tiny food festival at the same time. And this year they had some absolutely bonkers offerings, like a pepperoni pizza skull and Korean-style corn dogs that are covered in powdered sugar and cinnamon and all kinds of crazy stuff. Wasn't sure if you had seen any of these menus. I don't think anything was colored blue, so that should be fine for you. But yeah, have you seen any of these crazy menu offerings, and are you excited to try them if you're coming to HHN?
Thank you, Brittany, for this call, because due to scheduling and D23 Expo really being the biggest thing in my life at the moment, we would have never been able to discuss the absolutely bonkers food that is happening at Halloween Horror Nights 31 at Universal Studios Florida and Universal Orlando Resort. How we dedicated a full episode to this park, and yet because it was evergreen, it stands alone, on its own as a planning guide. It didn't include the wackadoo food happening at this Halloween event. I am remiss. So I'm so glad that you called and we are able to talk about this, because what is going on with the food over there? It truly is. You're right. It's like its own food festival, though I would almost say the food happening at Halloween Horror Nights right now in Orlando is more like its own state fair, because they're kind of mimicking that more than anything. They're just pushing food to the limit and doing some really cool stuff, I gotta say. I've seen the full lineup of stuff. I've seen some early coverage, and I'm still like blown away by some of the things. I will add, I swear we did an interview with someone who works on the culinary team at Universal Orlando, and we discussed, it was like pizza fries and something else. It might have been the Twisted Taters, but I don't remember. I know we discussed it in an episode, and we've done so many episodes at this point, I can't even find it. I can't even find it. So if anyone's better at remembering these episodes than I am, there is an interview about that somewhere. But there are a few items we need to discuss, most of which you hit. Because I'm not going to discuss toothsome milkshakes. That's not in the park. That doesn't count. Even though everyone keeps posting a photo of it. Does not count. So the Korean style hot dog that I most want to talk about here is the maggot covered cheese dog. Yes, you heard that correctly. Maggot. And apparently, I have not had one yet. I've not had a Korean style hot dog. I've seen them. They look delicious. It's never happened for me. One day it will. But the difference here is that this is a hot dog dipped in a rice flour batter and deep fried. And in the case of this maggot-covered delicacy, it is also covered in mozzarella and puffed rice so that it looks like bugs to align with the bugs eaten alive kind of bug-themed haunted house they have, which is terrifying but delicious. Truly 10 out of 10 for theming, for taste, because that sounds like a great snack, but it also has an absolutely disgusting name. They have some other food where they call like cauliflower zombie brains, and I think like funnel cake sticks, rat tails, which not so much. But this one, maggot covered cheese dog, I feel like that's a home run. There are also a ton of twisted taters, which is a huge Halloween Horror Nights food. It's basically a big old stick with like a spiral cut French fry. Some are covered in queso, some are dusted with like, I think it was Flaming Hot Cheetos. There's different versions of it this year. And that's why I keep drawing this kind of state fair comparison, because where else are you going to walk around with a potato on a stick at? A state fair. This is kind of, I guess in a way, it's like a state fair that maybe zombies attacked and now it has its own story in a way. Wouldn't that be fun if they like themed all the food to be like a state fair that got overtaken? Anyway, that's not my job. I am not smart enough to work at Universal Creative. So instead, I will just highlight that these people, these smart people behind these events, really know how to reinvent pizza, because we've had pizza for a while, and we mostly have like pizza and calzones. It's basically like pizza or like a folded up pizza. And at this point, we have pizza fries, which are a classic. Fries covered in sausage, pepperoni, sauce, and cheese. Also, I read on Inside Universal that there is a vegan version this year. Incredible. But their new version of pizza this year is called a pizza skull. And when I say that to you, you're probably thinking like, I would be thinking like a Hot Pocket shaped like shaped like a skull. Like it's got everything inside. It's got those little teeny tiny bites of like sausage, and it's just, you know, all gonna crispy skull shell. But no, the skull is stuffed with pepperoni and cheese, but there's no sauce because it is sitting in a pool of sauce like blood. Come on. How good is that? A pool of sauce like blood. Truly, Brittany, thank you, because I would have completely forgotten to discuss this because I'm in denial that I was not at opening night of HHN. Granted, it was our family summer vacation. Theme parks are goofy. And it was literally my husband's birthday. But still, I am sad that I didn't get to eat a pizza skull. I'm going to have to rectify that at some point. I will be going to Orlando during the holiday season. I don't know if I'm going to be able to squeeze Halloween Horror Nights in because I kind of have a tight itinerary. But we'll see what we can do, because I got to get that pizza skull. If anyone is going, please let me know what you thought of the food. Please let me know if you get the pizza skull. I want to know more about it. Oh, and thank you for your call, and have so much fun at Halloween Horror Nights, whoever goes. Be safe. Try not to scream too much. I always lose my voice when I go. I am always petrified and I'm always hiding behind someone else because I'm a fraidy cat, but I hope you are more brave than I and have the best time. That's our show! Thank you all so much for listening, and a very special thank you to Becky Klein of the Walt Disney Archives for coming on our show. It is so exciting to have had Becky on. I'm honored, and it's such a wonderful way to kick off the week of D23 Expo 2022. You can rate, review, and follow Very Amusing on Apple Podcasts, and rate and follow Very Amusing on Spotify. I saw in some newsletter I'm subscribed to that they might bring commenting, which I guess means reviews, to Spotify, so I will keep you posted if I will formally request any love notes there. But regardless, please rate us, please review us if you have not already. I pretty sure I'm just preaching to the choir here, but just in case, it does help so much with getting this podcast out to a new audience who may not be familiar with what goes on here. So I thank you. I thank you. I thank you. I thank you in advance. You can give us a call, rain or shine, day or night, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Yes, I did for 1 second forget how many days in the year there are. Give us a call anytime at 747-CHURROS. You can also text us a voice note to 747-CHURROS or email us a little voice memo to 747-CHURROS@gmail.com. Now, I will provide a caveat that we got a lot of calls to get through. I still have a ton that I want to answer. I just started building a new spreadsheet so I can break down all of the calls we have that are outstanding and try to get to them. I have been going through them and I'm doing my best to get to timely ones, and I have been texting people directly. So if you get a text message from the Churros hotline, it is not a robot. It is me desperately trying to answer your timely question. So please know I'm doing my best, and we will be hopefully getting through a big old chunk of those soon. I think we might have to do a standalone Churros episode because we have so many that I want to play for you. So if you have not had yours answered yet, please know that I promise I'm trying to get to it. We got busy phone lines. Yeah, we do welcome your calls because all of the calls are so different, and it is so helpful to hear all sorts of questions about everything from like easier ways to visit Disneyland to one mystery I'm trying to work on about a string of dates where there are literally no hotel rooms available, and it does not make sense. So I'm looking into that. But just to let you know, if you have called, I'm trying my best. And if you have not called, give us a call. Join the party. It's a good time. And because I'm actively working on it now is a great time to call, because it will definitely sit in this new organized spreadsheet I made, and it will get answered. If you want to get your mitts on merchandise, head to very-amusing.com, where, oh man, I'm recording this over the weekend. I'm going to do it. We are adding infant and kids clothing to the website. I don't know if toddler is a separate category, but I ordered all the sizes for all the kids. So stay posted to my social media for announcements, but it should be up on the website by now. And if it's not, yell at me. I give you full rights to yell at me. That does not apply to my mom. I don't want her to yell at me because I will yell back, but the rest of you I can't yell back at. So just yell at me. You can follow me at Carly Wiesel on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Remember, I will be blowing up those feeds. I'm a little less on TikTok because it takes so much effort and I'm old, but I will be all over those feeds throughout the duration of D23 Expo. So definitely, definitely, definitely follow me. Or even if you really want to know up to the second news, make sure you set alerts for me so that you know what is happening at D23 Expo. Or you can join the Fomaly at facebook.com/groups/CarlyWiesel. This episode was edited luxuriously by Jeff Fox. Thanks so much for listening. See you real soon.
Hey, sweetheart, it's Mom. Great information again, and I'm starting to get it a little more, this whole Disney Plus, all that stuff. I'm getting it. About the fireworks, because that's where you started when I was listening to it. I agree with you that the California Grill restaurant had the best viewing outside the restaurant on the balcony. It's so spacious there. It's not crowded, and you see everything. The Magic Kingdom is, like, lit. It's great. This is the one thing I wanted to say to you. You said that at Epcot, there's a Hanson concert, and I know it's video or whatever, but being Hanson's number one fan, who was in love with Zach, and I schlepped you to concerts, and I bought you Hanson clothes, and I got you to run by the stage to get a picture with Zach. You know what? We never saw that. You never took me there. I would have loved that. So we'll have to do that next time. And the FOMO of racing through the park, trying to do as much as you can. I am so the same as you, like, exactly. I go until it's dark and it's night, and I get to the hotel room and I just drop. And then we do it all again the next day starting at 7 a.m. So I agree with you. 2.5 full days, full force days, is enough for us for a great mini vacation. When you talked about Disney Springs again, we have the same taste. I love Wine Bar George. I love the Disney store. That's probably the best Disney store anywhere, even in Magic Kingdom, is the one in Disney Springs. I love it. And, of course, waiting in line a half hour for Gideon cookies. Getting the Genie Plus a little bit better. I know we have to get up at 7. I know I didn't know that there was other things like virtual queue, like that's fine. I'm just learning the basics, Lightning Lane, Genie Plus, I'm just getting it. But the one time, which I think was pretty recent, we got up at 7, you made our plans, and you said, what ride do you want to see at Epcot first? And I said, I have to go on Soarin'. That's like my favorite of all-time ride. And we got there 1 minute late. 1 minute late, we were denied access to go on the ride, and we could have booked. We booked later, a couple hours later. But that is extremely disappointing when you get up at 7 a.m. So for everybody that goes through all the virtual queues, the Lightning Lanes, be on time. Be a few minutes early. Don't miss your spot. That's, like, really important. The part about the luggage not magically appearing at your hotel, I remember we went to Disney World, and you were doing an article. It was 6 hotels in 7 days. And the best thing about this trip was that the Disney magic of our luggage appeared every day. At the end of our day, when we come back to the hotel, our luggage was in our room. So that's pretty sad that they don't do that. Hey, sweetie, it's me again. Okay, why do I always get disconnected? Okay, I know if you talk for an hour and a half, I'd have to just tell you how I feel about what you said, and then boom, I get disconnected. But I know right where I was. I was about to talk about the Grove Resort Orlando Hotel that was spacious and clean. It was so contemporary, and it was like, you're right, the parking, it was like having your car in your garage. It was great. The Disney Animal Kingdom Lodge will always remain a special place. We had such a great time at this great hotel. But that's our story, and I'm not going to share that one. So, yes, my favorite all-time hotel in the world is the Grand Floridian Hotel. That's where we always went as a family when you were 2 years old. It is such a great hotel. And we stayed a few times on the concierge floor. They give you great hot snacks before you go to the parks, I think about 3 or 4 o'clock, water bottles, if I recall, and surprisingly, there were plush robes. So, okay, Disney thing or not, I have to address something because it is Disney content. You brought it up. But I think that going on assignment to Disney and someone checking on you by possibly entering your hotel room makes me scared to death. Like, I should be with you on every single trip. Great idea to double lock your doors. Also put a chair upside down at the door so you'll hear it drop. Third, call up the front desk and see if you can not have this and tell them that you will check in daily. Maybe that would work and they'll take you off the list for them to go in your room. But I couldn't pass up the chance to stay safe. So the best is you can cut that out possibly. I love you. Great episode and stay safe, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.